You are listening to the It's Not Real Magic podcast. This episode was recorded June 21st, 2021, and published June 24th, 2021. Welcome to the It's Not Real Magic podcast. The question of the day is, if you could go back in time, what video game would you play for the first time again? I'm Kevin, and if I could play one video game for the first time all over again, it would be Minecraft.
I am Alexander, and if I could play one video game for the first time again, it would be Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time.
I'm Lucas. If I could play one game again for the first time, it would be Legend of Zelda The Wind Waker.
This is Jacob, and if I could play one video game for the first time, it would be Legend of Zelda Wind Waker.
Now, I disagree with the premise of the question, because I don't want to go back in time and play it as a kid again. I want to play it now as an adult.
For the first time.
Yes.
Knowing nothing about the game.
Yes. Yeah. And see if it's still as good as I think it is now, or if I just see it with rose-tinted glasses because I played it when I was young.
So would you want to play the original GameCube version, or would you want to play the HD version?
There's an HD version.
There's an HD version.
The HD version is the exact same. It just looks better. Correct?
Yes. I think there are also some quality of life changes, like if you have the Wind Waker, it will automatically adjust the wind whichever way your boat is pointing, so you don't have to stop the boat, pull out the Wind Waker, play the song, change the wind, get back in the boat.
That seems like cheating.
But still, it's basically the same game.
It's the same game. It's the same plot points. It's the same dungeons.
I might as well play HD. Might as well look nice.
But part of the artistic, interesting aspect of that game was graphic that they went for. What does
it still? It still has the same graphic. Well, it's very similar to the same graphic style. There are some noticeable differences that, like, some of the outlines are maybe slightly less black or less thick or more thick, or the shading is a little more rounded in some places, but it looks like the same game, just prettier depending on your point of view.
Okay.
It's funny because when I thought of this question, my first mind went to was probably going to be one of the Legend of Zelda games. But as I thought about it for a little bit, I decided, do I really want to? Because those are very good games, but none of them are games that I miss playing the first time, because they're still fun on the second and third playthrough.
I haven't got a second and third playthrough on them.
Well, if you ever do, they're still fun.
So why do you want Minecraft to be that game that you go back to?
So for Minecraft, it is because that game, when I first played it, was one so unlike any other game I'd played in terms of the malleability of the world, to where it's like, if you want to build a castle, you can. You just need to put in the time to do it and gather the resources to do it. And then at the end, you have this castle that you actually worked to build. It wasn't just like Age of Empires, just, you know, click villagers, say, build castle there and wait. You had to go build your castle. The other side of it was the exploration aspect of this. There's a hill over there. I can just go to that hill and see what's on the other side of it. And whatever's on the other side of it, I can go see what's past that and what's past that. And I have no idea what I'm going to find. And it's an adventure. The problem with Minecraft is the more you play the game, the less that exploration element is actually mysterious or entrancing, especially after you go to the wiki and you look up all the mechanics of the game. And it's like, well, I know there's a 30% chance I'm going to find this behind the hill, and a 40% chance I'm going to find that, and a 30% chance I'm going to find maybe something interesting-ish.
And when you turn cheats on, you just fly over the hill at a really fast rate of speed. That takes a bit of the exploration out of it as well.
I think my nostalgia for Minecraft was watching, what was the YouTube channel?
The Yogscast.
Yogscast, yes.
Simon and Lewis.
Lewis. Watching them play Minecraft, because at the time, I think it was still the beta version, so it was like very raw and brand new.
Yes.
Watching them was absolutely hilarious. So I would want to go back and relive that experience.
Well, I didn't know the game well enough to know that the things they did were scripted. Like the person coming into their world and sabotaging their stuff. I didn't know how Minecraft servers worked and that someone couldn't just get on their server unless they had put them on the server. So I didn't realize all the stuff was scripted. I thought it was real at the time because I hadn't played the game. I didn't understand how it worked.
Thanks for ruining it for me.
You were
all this time.
If you hadn't figured it out by episode 30, I would start to have concerns.
They had 30 episodes?
They had, I I think they had over 100 episodes. It just kept going and going and going.
Thank God they had time.
They were the first Minecraft YouTubers, and now there's, you know, thousands of Minecraft YouTubers.
They were one of the first.
One of the first, sure. The first one that I watched.
I was going to also give honorable mention to the original Portal.
Ooh.
Because that game was different, again, from anything else I'd played, and made your brain work in a way that other puzzle-solving games didn't.
Here's the thing. That is an excellent game. The problem for me is I did not enjoy my first playthrough as much as I did like my second or my third.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, this game is fantastic. I love it. I do not want to play it for the first time again and get stuck on like one or two puzzle rooms. That's just like, I have no idea. What is this?
It's the best.
How do I do this? And it's like, that was simple. I should have seen that. That is very good. Now, I would ask why Ocarina of Time for you, but I already have a fairly decent guess.
Oh, I would like to hear your guess.
Well, we first played that game when we rented or borrowed a Nintendo 64 from Alan Kenneth's, correct?
Don't remember who we borrowed it from.
I thought it was from the Kenneth's.
You got me there.
Or did we rent it from Family Video or whatever?
I think we did rent one. I feel like we did both. At one point we borrowed one, at one point we rented one.
I know we rented an Xbox a couple times from Family Video. And we played like Midtown Madness, and that was fun. And NFL Street, and that was fun. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying the games were good, but they were fun to us. Because they were video games that were not a Super Nintendo.
When the other option is nothing, it was a lot of fun.
Also, when the other option is nothing.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to throw an honorable mention out there of Myst or Riven. Because when you guys were playing those games, I was too young. I didn't play them. I didn't get them.
Mm-hmm.
It just wasn't something that I took part in. So to go back and play it and understand what it was like, I think it was... Again, I was not part of it, but my understanding is it was kind of a family dynamic of like one person would be playing, but the rest of the family or the older siblings would be watching and trying to help them figure out the puzzles. Like that's a very cool experience that I think we did the same thing with Ocarina of Time when you played that. Mm-hmm. Like one person's playing, but everyone else is watching and giving input or making jokes or whatnot. And I feel like we don't get that in gaming as much anymore.
It's not like a family game.
Right. Maybe if you get a... Nintendo probably has some, because they've always been the more family-oriented company.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably also... It probably has more to do with the fact that we are all grown up and are adults and can play video games on our own now.
All right, so here's a video game idea, and maybe this already exists because I'm not in that world. Escape rooms are pretty common things. Is there escape room video game where you can, like, log into it with, like, a group of... people, and on your own computers, you're going around an escape room trying to figure it out just virtually.
I would have to imagine something like that exists. I played escape room genre video games before I ever heard of real life escape rooms. This was back in like the mid zeros.
Okay.
When I was playing flash games on congregate.com. And escape room was a very popular genre because all you needed were a bunch of static screens and puzzles in them, so they were very easy to develop. And then there are people, like any genre, it's, well, there's 80 or 90% of this that is mediocre, and then there's that 10% of, you knew what you were doing when you made this, and you made a good game. Mm-hmm. And those were a lot of fun, because those would also have like the pre-3D rendered graphics. So you got images that you wouldn't normally get out of Flash games because you didn't have to animate anything. It's just have computer display an image.
Hmm.
Have computer display a slightly different version of the same image 10 seconds later after you clicked on something.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a lot of those, because I remember those Flash escape puzzle games, a lot of them tried to be scary, which I didn't like. Like, I don't like jump scares or being freaked out. Also, they were all single player. So the idea of a multiplayer escape room working with other people to get to solve the puzzles could be pretty cool. That I haven't seen.
Isn't there a game called like It Takes Two or something like that? That's a similar concept. I haven't played it.
Yes. There's It Takes Two and the same developer made one.
The audience
one.
Is saying yes.
There's also the same developer made one of these. You play as, there's two separate players playing in the same story and you're in prison and you have to break out of prison together. So there are those games. But it sounds like you're talking more like drop in, drop out.
Not necessarily drop in, drop out, but more of a, you need at least four people because somebody's going to have to be pushing this button on this side of the room. So he's going to have to be pulling a lever at this side of the room at the same time somebody else is doing something.
I know what you want.
But you have to figure out how to do it first. And then actually you go here and do this, you go here and do this kind of
thing. The game you're looking for exists. It's called Portal 2.
Again, two players.
It is two players. I mean, you could generalize the concept to four players. Now, I don't know of one that goes that far.
Now, take what you just described. A bunch of people have to go do various tasks to do a thing.
Mm-hmm.
But add in, there's another player who's trying to kill them all without being caught. And you've just described Among Us.
Interesting.
I was thinking Team Fortress 2.
I was thinking my career. Okay. All right.
Question for you, Lucas. I know of three games that you used to be a fairly decent fan of. I want to know if any of these would make, if they can either take first place because you hadn't considered them, or if they get honorable mention.
Okay.
Those are Trine, Bastion, and Brothers, A Tale of Two Sons.
What was the game you used to play where you like ride around on landscapes and like you hit certain things to make gravity effective or not, and you like slide around and shoot people?
Tribes Ascend.
You played that a bunch.
I did play a lot of that game. No, I think I liked my first experiences with all those games. Like, I played them when I was older, especially like Trine. That's a fairly recent-ish game, like within the last, I don't know, 5 years or something. Or not Trine. I'm thinking of the other Supergiant game after Bastion. Transistor is what I'm thinking of. I liked my experiences with those games. I don't necessarily feel the need to go back and play them again for the first time.
You don't want to recapture that feeling?
No, Bastion I can just listen to the soundtrack and get the feeling. Trine wasn't actually that good of a game, it was just pretty. I forget the others.
Brothers.
No, Brothers was a complete experience. I think I played it all in one sitting, or maybe just two, because it's a very short game.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the emotional ride that it could have been. I don't think if I played it again, it would be any different.
For those of us who have never played Brothers, give us a quick premise of it.
Brothers is a game where you control two characters. So on your controller, you've got two sticks. One of them is the older brother, one of them is the younger brother. And then one of them is the left trigger, one of them is the right trigger. So you have to work together to solve the puzzles by using the two of them, but controlling them independently. And it does some cool stuff where, like...
What is the premise of the game?
The premise of the game... The story premise is your father is sick and dying, and the two brothers have to go off into the world to go get a cure and bring it back to him to save him. That's the premise of the game. And then the gameplay is very unique because you're controlling two characters at once.
And the characters have different abilities, basically, because we're like, one older brother's stronger, your little brother's smaller, can get places the bigger brother can't, kind of thing. So there's a lot of, it's why you need two different, basically, characters
right.
to accomplish things.
And there is some storytelling in it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Jacob, for you, why do you want to play through Wind Waker again for the first time?
Because I thoroughly enjoyed it. And I wanted that experience again, that first time experience of getting to enjoy the art style of Wind Waker and the gameplay. I think it was it was my most favorite Legend of Zelda game that I think I ever played start to finish by myself. All the other ones, I typically would watch other people play it or just play what I wanted, then end up never finishing the game. But I think that was one I went from start to finish because I really enjoyed the gameplay and the visual style of it. And it was I guess there are some dark parts of that, but it was a more light, joyful environment than some of the other Legend of Zeldas, which I think I enjoyed.
I'll tell you what, the other day at work, I forget when it was last week, I turned on the Wind Waker soundtrack and just played it in the background while I was working. That is a good time.
Mm-hmm. That had to be recommend. On YouTube, right? Because that's not on Spotify.
It's not on Spotify, but there's a YouTube video that's just all the songs back to back to back. It's like a hour-long video or whatever.
All right, before we move on, I want to give an honorable mention to The Legend of Zelda Majora's Mask. What, you want to come back to you? Mm-hmm. Okay, we'll be coming back to Alexander after this. But the reason that I didn't nominate Majora's Mask was, one, because Legend of Zelda seemed like low-hanging fruit and I had extra time to think about this. So I was like, I should come up with something a little bit more interesting than this. But the other thing is, the first time we played through that game, we couldn't even complete the first 3-day cycle. And it wasn't until we went online and looked up a walkthrough of how you complete the first cycle and get to go back in time and actually like start the real game that I got to play it. Now, the first time that I did a full and complete playthrough of the game, I would love to recapture that. And getting to actually experience the full world that game portrays again. Because that was one of the first times that I could actually view video games as an art form because of some of the ways that it portrayed the characters that are living in a world that's about to be destroyed and how they deal with that in their personal lives and go about, well, you still have all these daily responsibilities, so do you just keep doing what you normally do? Or do you say, well, the world's going to end, I don't care, I'm going to go do something else? Do you just hide in your room and cry with a loved one? There were a lot of interesting takes on it.
I don't think I ever actually played Majora's Mask proper.
I don't think anybody else here did.
There's a guy who lives in a toilet.
Ocarina of Time, right? That was like...
Majora's Mask was actually after Ocarina of Time. Mm-hmm. It actually used a lot of the same game assets of its... Mm. Hey, this character, they just took the model and just copied it over into the other game and changed the name.
Okay. Ocarina of Time was the first time I played a puzzle-solving 3D game. And that's what was like revolutionary. It's like... So there's this whole world I can walk around in, and I'm trying to solve puzzles. This is like amazing. So that's why I want to go back and relive that.
Do you want to relive the water temple though?
No,
because nobody liked that. But maybe you did.
But it's memorable.
It is memorable.
I remember in Ocarina of Time the first time I took a stick with fire on it and touched a spider web, and I was like, oh, so this actually the environment now reacts to what I'm doing. And it's not just pixels, like they'll do something. And it just blew my mind in a whole new way. The other honorable mention for me is Limbo, which encapsulates one of the best things of any game I've ever played, which is you open the game and there's no start button. There's no opening menu. There's no tutorial or anything. It's the game starts and you figure it out from there. Obviously, you can press escape and figure things out at that point. But it's like, if you just want to be immersed in it, it's just black screen that fades to the forest setting. And from there, you figure everything out through trial and error. And that was so fun. And that game was very, very immersive, especially in games basically played in two dimensions, which is just like, wow, how do you immerse me in two dimensions? It's like, I've played plenty of games at this point that were way more in depth than this, but this just sucked me right in. That one was.
That was a game, I've never played it, but I've seen enough of it to tell that is a game that knew the visual style that it went for mm-hmm. and nailed it.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a lot of respect for video games that do that well.
Sequel isn't as good, but also fun.
So, to segue to a new topic, I have a question for you all. And my question is, do you have an allergy that you're willing to share?
Yes.
What is that allergy?
Look, when you asked me a similar question earlier and I gave you an answer, you told me to answer yes or no. So I figured this was another trap. I wasn't going to play into your hand this time.
That's what I was planning all along.
Well played. My allergies are cats and dogs. Probably other animals, but I wouldn't know because what other kinds of pets do people have around here?
After all those years of playing cats and dogs, you're not actually allergic to cats and dogs.
I've been allergic to cats since time immemorial. Dogs is a more recent development, which is a little bit annoying, but it's also not the end of the world because I don't spend a lot of time around people who have dogs. Despite the fact that one of my closest friends had his roommate and also younger brother try to convince him to get a dog. And I was like, I mean, if he convinces him, great. I can't really come over to your house anymore, but, you know, happy for you if you do.
They have medications.
Yes, but I live in America. That costs money.
So my next question is, what is your response? What is your allergic response to cat or dog?
It's largely irritation and I can't describe
it. You just
don't
like them?
Almost like a feeling of clogged sinuses, but they're not actually clogged up. It's hard to describe. I wouldn't say that it's difficult to breathe, but you can, it feels like something's not right in there. But then also it's like my eyes begin to itch. I feel like I have to scratch them all the time, which only exacerbates the problem.
Yeah, it because hurts to scratch your eyes.
Then you're just moving the dander around.
That's like my son who gets sunscreen in his eyes and then rubs his eyes to get the sunscreen out and just pushes it deeper in and starts crying. Like, actually, that's what you need to do. Alexander, do you have a allergy?
At some point in the last 2 or 3 years, there's something now that blooms in the fall, both in Wyoming and here in Michigan, that bugs me. Like that stereotypical seasonal allergy response. It's like sore throat, runny nose, congestion, just meh.
So basically you have a cold for a couple of days?
Or a week, or 2 weeks.
Or a week, okay.
Whatever it is. I have no idea what it is. I don't
But it's
know.
Always the same time each year?
It has been. It's been for like the last 3 years, and I don't know what suddenly changed, because I never had that before. I was like, this is weird. Because once you have it for like the second and third time in a row, you're like, okay, there's probably an allergy. It's not just I keep getting sick sometime between, you know, end of August and beginning of October, somewhere in there. During the month of September, I guess, anyway, to say that. So that would be one. Then the other one is, I think I'm actually semi-allergic to dairy from a standpoint of it causes like skin breakouts.
Hmm.
So it's not like the, oh, spicy milk, Jim Gaffigan, you know, digestional issue. But I notice a correlation between having a lot of dairy in a short period of time and skin breakouts.
Hmm.
I'm like, well, this is annoying because I love dairy. So do I take the pain, the awkwardness, or do I take the cheesecake? And most of the time I take the cheesecake.
That's fair. You said this allergy, what time of year does it occur?
Somewhere between the end of August, beginning of October.
So the fall.
Early fall.
Wait, this is right before hockey season starts, because hockey season normally starts beginning of October. So that's when you've had the longest stint of no hockey that this allergy comes on.
It's an interesting theory. My theory was going to be, you said you had this in Wyoming and you've had it in Michigan. It would be interesting if you went to Boston, if you still had this, but you've never been to Boston in the fall.
This is true.
I was hoping for the soundboard to come in, but
we are not doing the soundboard.
Oh, man.
It is.
What's the point of having the soundboard if you're not going to use the soundboard?
However,
here's what we'll do. We'll set up a Patreon. If you pay $5 or more a month, you get to choose a sound that we will put on the soundboard once per episode.
At the appropriate time.
But here's the problem.
Or at the inappropriate
four of us
time,
would
just
be the
to make
ones
sure.
contributing to Patreon. So we'd just be paying ourselves.
No, you'd be paying me.
Oh.
I would say, so if I give you $5, I can get a rim shot on something I say?
I've sold out more for less.
What if I
interesting.
What if I Venmo you $5?
I don't have Venmo.
What if I just pull up a ring shot on my phone?
Do you have PayPal?
Everybody
has PayPal and doesn't work.
I have PayPal until I forgot my password and got locked out last night.
That's not so good.
By the way, that could be another discussion. PayPal sucks.
Okay.
Really?
Yeah, I've got a beef with PayPal. But all right, we might have a bonus at the end of this episode. Let's go.
No, so Lucas, do you have an allergy that you're willing to share?
I have always been allergic to cats. That's still a thing. I'm not aware of any other allergies, but in recent months, asthma has become more of a problem. So the allergies I do have, if they get activated, it's worse. Or like exercising in cold weather, mm-hmm. Things like that will cause more issues than they used to.
I also have cats. I didn't say that. Cats.
So allergies. If we went to like the Broadway show Cats, you guys would be in major trouble.
I would be bothered.
I would be in major trouble for reasons other than allergies.
Actually, you know what? The Broadway show Cats would probably be the safest place to go to experience cats for you guys. Because there wouldn't be the dander.
Yeah, more so it's when you're an electrician and you get sent to a job and you walk into a crazy cat lady house and she has like 9 cats that live all throughout the house. And you're expected to complete your job without, you know, running away crying.
And sneezing all over them.
Or just punting them out the window. Yeah.
Do they, like, crawl around you, like, while you're trying to, like, wire up boxes and stuff?
Well, I mean,
have
you met a cat? You can't herd them, so.
Well, there's two kinds of cat. There's cats that come and, like, rub on your legs, uh-huh. And there's cats that, like, hide in the corner. You never see them.
If it's a house with 9 cats, there's some of both.
True.
Does an N95 help with that at all?
No.
I'm sorry for your loss.
So now to me, an allergy.
Jacob, do you have any allergies you'd like to share with the
class?
Well,
yes, Kevin, thank you for asking. I didn't think anyone would ask. So I had suspected an allergy of this particular food a long time ago, and so I stopped eating this food. But then I recently ate this food again and exhibited an allergic response to it. So probably well over a year ago, we had smoothies for dinner. I don't know why, but we did. But it was like fruit smoothies. So it was like blueberries, raspberries.
For dinner?
Yeah. It was a smoothie for dinner.
A dinner smoothie as opposed to a liquid lunch. It's okay. A smoothie dinner. Okay. Or a smoothie supper. Liquid lunch, smoothie supper.
Talk about options right now? Because I'd love to hear some of your food options that you have on the daily.
Wait, was this when you were doing Whole 30 and you couldn't eat anything?
Okay. Nope. No, I'm confused as to why you would choose to only have a smoothie for dinner, but I'm not going to judge.
It was
you do you, man.
I honestly remember this day vividly because of what happened, but we had driven, it would have been spring of 2020, because we drove past a house on Lafayette Court, Fayette. We drove past a house on Fayette Court because someone just bought it. And we were headed back to the house. It was dinner time, and I said, hey, honey, let's stop by Subway. And then we're like, no, Subway doesn't sound that good. Let's just go home and find something to eat. So we got home. We had to find something to eat. We had lots of frozen fruit. So we're like, we'll just make a smoothie.
So there's your answer. You have a smoothie for dinner when your first option didn't go.
Yes.
When you need something for dinner and you're looking for something
in the
house.
The backup plan is the smoothie.
You open up the freezer. Oh, hey, there it is.
And like we had spinach to use up, and I think we had chia seed for a time. So we threw some of that in there.
Why?
So it was like this like superfood smoothie, right?
Okay. Okay. Well, now I'm tracking.
Okay. I'm glad you're tracking. So one of the ingredients we put in there was bananas, but it did have a lot of things in there. And I think we gave some. Cheryl had some, Wyatt had some, I had some, and I like sucked down a full like 10-ounce glass of it, just like, because we had the big boba straws, so you could you could like really chug it quick. And so I sucked that down, and then Wyatt didn't finish his, so I finished his up. And I was like, okay, that was dinner. Like, I did something healthy for once, and we're going good. And then 25 minutes later, my stomach turns. Like, this is not good. And next thing I know, and of course, this smoothie is the color of basically purple because of all the fruit in it. And so it all came up purple. And I threw up this whole smoothie. I was like,
I
don't know.
Smoothie and a half, it sounds like.
I thought, it's got to be the spinach. Like, it's the roughage, right? Like, my body's not used to having leafy, healthy greens. So I'm like, that's got to be what caused me to throw up. So I'm not going to eat spinach ever again. Well, so none of that stuff really sounded good for a while. I thought maybe it was bananas. Anyway, so I hadn't eaten basically any of those foods for over a year.
I have a question. Did it come up cold?
No, it was not a Ben Buehler Shamrock Shake instant. So then this spring, we go to a wedding in Indiana where my wife is standing for the wedding, but I am just an observer at the wedding. I'm just a guest.
You're sitting.
So I'm sitting, right. So I don't have any responsibilities or anything to do. So the day of the wedding, we get up and have like the continental breakfast or whatever at the hotel before the wedding. And it was all sugary stuff. It was like Fruit Loops and cinnamon rolls and like all this really, really sweet stuff. I'm like,
continental breakfast.
I want something that's not quite so much sugar.
Making
even though
the
I
size
didn't
of a continent.
Stuff. And so they had a bowl of fruit and there was like apples and an orange, but there was some bananas. So I was like, you know what? Potassium in the morning, it's good. So I take a banana. I'm like, I don't have anything else going on today besides showing up at this wedding. So I'm like, I'm going to have a banana. So I eat the banana at breakfast. We go back to the hotel room. My wife gets ready. My stomach starts turning on me. We drive to the venue. I drop her off. I make a beeline back to the hotel room. I lay down in bed. And within a half hour, the banana came back up. I'm throwing up in the hotel bathroom. I'm like, I am never eating a banana again. However, banana bread is delicious and it stays down.
That was my first question. I was like, what about banana bread?
Banana bread's fine. Banana cake, I can do it.
Thank now, Lord. But here's the real question. Were the smoothies still better than Subway?
No, not that night.
Okay.
So apparently I'm allergic to bananas. And so now it's funny because every time like I fill a prescription or like have a new doctor's appointment or get my eyes checked or something, they're like, do you have any allergies? I'm like, bananas? They're like, oh, really? And when I was at
Thanks
the dentist.
For making me feel judged how healthcare works.
I was at the dentist, and the dental hygienist was like, "Oh, that's too bad. I love bananas." I'm like, "Thanks, rub it in." So I just kind of steer clear of raw bananas now.
My lungs are allergic to water.
Uh-huh.
Have you done a search on people with banana allergies to see if that puts you like at risk to being allergic to anything else just to try to head off danger?
No.
So I'm not going to address the peeing noise in the background. Just want to make sure.
I don't think I hear it.
I have no idea what you are talking about.
Yeah. Never happened.
You do know I can edit this in post, right? I won't, but I can.
I know, but it was this moment of, is anyone going to address this or are we just going to let it slide? I had to address it.
You addressed it.
You did address it. Congratulations. Is there anything else you wanted to go on about bananas?
No, it's just my wife and both my boys enjoy eating bananas. So we always have bananas in the house. And it's like this constant reminder that I could throw up at any time.
And now you like bananas though, right? Just
yes.
You like the taste of them.
I do.
So you wish you weren't allergic.
I do like the banana Laffy Taffy as well.
Here's the thing. I don't care for cats.
That's not a real banana.
So the fact that I'm allergic to cats is not a problem for me because it's like, it's not like I want to be around these things anyways. But bananas, like, yeah, that's rough.
I think I could live a perfectly happy life without eating bananas.
Well, here's the thing. Here's a couple bright sides for you. One, it's not like some people who have nut allergies where even if they don't eat the nut, if they're just near it and breathe in the dust or something.
I guess I haven't rubbed banana all over my face yet to see if it does anything.
But I eat it or rub it on my face?
It's a digestive problem and not a you're going to need an EpiPen or you're going to stop breathing kind of problem. Also, who knows? Maybe someday you accidentally ingest some kind of chemical that you shouldn't have ingested and you need to throw up. Just pop a banana.
And that'll be the one time like I'm cured of the banana allergy. I'm like, dang it, throw up.
There's two more upsides to this. One, you can still eat things that have bananas cooked in them.
Yeesh.
So that's a big plus. The other side, you're not allergic to something that's like super common. I have a coworker that's allergic to turmeric, I believe is what it's called. It's
a spice, right?
Yes, but it's used as like a natural coloring. Yellow food coloring. Yep. Mm-hmm. So it's in a ton of things
like
yellow
popcorn.
Yeah, or yellow mustard. And so the list of things that can possibly have this in it is massive. Nobody's slipping bananas into food behind your back.
Although we might try now.
It would be a fun challenge.
You can never eat a Bluth frozen banana. So sad.
I'm just trying to think of ways. How can we get bananas in them? You know?
We had like a banana movie directed by some famous director.
So Jacob, do you listen to Holler Back Girl by Gwen Stefani any differently now?
Stinks bananas. B. No.
Okay.
I'm a little lost, but I think I get the gist.
Ooh, finally a reference that Kevin doesn't get.
My topic for today is M. Night Shyamalan movie reviews. I didn't really have a great way of how I wanted to lead this off, so I'm just going to throw it out there. Here's the thing is, there are a lot of Shyamalan movies. And when they're good, I feel like they're really good. And when they're bad, they're 90% of the M. Night Shyamalan movies.
Ooh.
You didn't write down your timestamp to edit your magic of post-production.
This is not for editing post-production. This is just to help orient myself when I'm editing the stream later.
Yeah.
So I guess it is to help with the magic of post-production, but it's not to cut certain things in or out. It's just so if I'm like, oh yeah, I know this happened during this section. Yeah, okay. This is about where I want to be looking for it. And then as soon as I delete the first bit of audio, the timestamps become useless anyways.
So there's a limited number of M. Night Shyamalan movies. So the first person to answer could end up listing them all. So are we limiting it to just your favorite?
I'll start with Unbreakable because I think that's the oldest Shyamalan movie that I personally know. If anybody wants to go farther back than that, you're more than welcome to. But isn't Unbreakable like the first-ish one?
Unbreakable was his
second or third famous one.
So I've the first famous one.
Home movies.
Sixth Sense was
before Unbreakable?
Yeah. Sixth Sense was his breakout into everything.
Oh. Yes. I thought Unbreakable was the breakout movie. And Sixth Sense was riding on the coattails.
Actually two sequels to Unbreakable that I have not seen that continue the David Dunn storyline
and
bring up the villains.
Yes, asterisk. So
Aspen, there's a, what's the other one?
Well, there's Split, mm-hmm. which like the, I believe the post credits reveal of that movie is that, oh yeah, by the way, this takes place in the Unbreakable universe. So that's the only intersection with Unbreakable that movie actually has. Then there's Glass, which is technically a sequel to Split, but two of the three main characters are from Unbreakable.
Okay.
And I've not seen those. I have not seen Split or Glass. So those who have seen it, please, no spoiler alerts.
I don't think anybody here has seen Split. I have seen Glass. What I will tell you, it's okay. It's a not great Shyamalan movie.
It's in the 90%.
It's in the 90%, solidly. Maybe I would appreciate it more if I've seen Split, but you don't need to see Split. If you have a basic idea of what Split is about, and the fact that there's a guy and a guy's girlfriend, you can pick up the rest.
Okay. Unbreakable, I love. It's like top two or three movies for me all time. So
all time?
All time.
So is that also your top Shyamalan movie then?
It would by almost default have to be.
Yes. Well, I mean, there could be another Shyamalan movie that tops that and it's top one or two.
It's true.
Yeah, there really isn't.
Okay.
No.
I like Signs. I like The Village. Mm-hmm. I do not like The Sixth Sense. I won't watch it again.
You won't watch The Sixth Sense again?
Too many jump scares?
Yeah.
That's fair.
I don't like... I don't like scary... I don't like being scared. But I also don't like creepily modified people.
I say it is very... It's not that it's gory, and it's not that it's violent, but it is very disturbing.
Right. Like, if there's a spooky monster, okay, it's a monster. Or if there's an alien, okay, it's an alien. But when it's a person, but there's something weird or wrong about the person, that bothers me more than...
So you don't like The Exorcist?
I probably wouldn't.
Okay.
It's a shame, because I think The Sixth Sense is... I would put it in top three of his movies. Like, I think it's a very well-done movie.
I would put it in the top four.
You put it in the top four. Okay, what are the three above it?
Unbreakable, Signs, and The Village.
Okay. I see I'm going to have to take the unpopular opinion. I'm going to say, I don't think Signs is a good movie.
Ooh, them's fighting words.
Why? Well, maybe I don't want to know. But why don't you think Signs is a good movie?
Well, one, it relies slightly more on effects than a lot of the other Shyamalan movies around that time. And they're not good. The alien does not look believable nowadays.
True.
Nowadays. Second, this, like, one of the themes of the movie is that there are no coincidences, but the way that it sets it up to prove that feels very contrived. And I don't feel like it's executed well in sort of the idea that all these things work together and then Mel Gibson regains his faith. It's like, well, he did this because that's actually the story that we wanted to tell, so we're just gonna orchestrate the rest of this to make it sort of work, I guess.
Mm.
But it's like, I mean, your wife's still dead. So congratulations, you saved your son, I guess.
Kind of like
Would you rather his son have died at the end? Would that have made it more believable?
I would rather have watched The Village.
There is an element of Signs of like, you're not able to put the pieces together on your own. It just tells them to you at the end. It's not like you could have seen it coming or had a clue to it. It's just, oh yeah, big reveal at the end. Here's why this was.
It's also, here are aliens that are way more advanced than us. They're also defeated by the most common, it's not an element, but the most common substance on the planet. And they don't even bother to wear protective gear while they're down here. They also don't come with any weapons or anything. They just come with the gas.
Movie can be 1917. Or
that is a good movie. I would say that is a good movie. I'm not going to say it's the best movie. 18? Or the greatest movie. But it is a good movie.
It was 1917, wasn't it?
It was 1917.
That's the like the one shot take thing. Or still have yet to see that.
It is a good movie if you like the first 5 minutes, you will like the rest of the movie. If you watch the first 5 minutes and you're like, ah, this is not doing it for me, you're probably not going to like the rest of the movie because when it's doing the one-shot take, one scene just rolls into the next.
Okay.
Except for the one part where it very explicitly doesn't, but that's neither here nor there.
Got to give them a break sometime.
That's true.
Okay.
I watched that movie in the dark by myself. It's very long. Very slow. It's over 2 hours, I think, isn't it?
But it is not an M. Night Shyamalan film, correct?
It is correct. It is. It is outside of the discussion.
Okay.
Scope.
I did not raise my hand. It is not a Shyamalan movie. It shall be stricken from the record.
Okay. So where is the table at on Lady in the Water?
I've never seen it.
I've seen it once, and I was not impressed by it.
I didn't see it.
I would love to solicit opinions on it. Should I see it?
Based on what I gather your liking of M. Night Shyamalan films to be.
Okay.
You will put it in the 90%. Well, okay. When you say 90% of them you don't like or aren't worth anything, what movie are we talking about that's in that 10% for you?
So for me, if somebody said, Kevin, I want to see M. Night Shyamalan movies, I would recommend in this order, not necessarily in order of viewing, but in order of preference, The Village, Sixth Sense, Unbreakable.
Okay.
Signs being fourth. Or Signs, don't even watch Signs.
Like watch The Happening before Signs.
Because, okay, so
that would depend on the person.
I've got a list of the Shyamalan movies pulled up in front of me. And I'm just going to kind of go through them and ones that maybe you would know. So like first is Sixth Sense, then it was Unbreakable, Signs, The Village, Lady in the Water, The Happening, which you haven't mentioned, which was lousy.
I saw that it was trash.
The Last Airbender, which is not out of his...
I was hoping nobody would mention that movie.
Now, I saw that movie in the theater in 3D.
I might have seen it with you.
And at that time, I had not watched the TV show. I have no idea why I went to go see that movie.
Have you watched the TV show since?
Yes.
Do you recommend?
Yes.
Okay.
We're rewatching it right now at the moment.
Nice.
And then it's five movies from 2013 to 2021 that I've never even seen, which is After Earth, The Visit, Split, Glass, and Old.
Old just came out.
Just came out, yes.
Just came out. Like, if you want to see it, you have to either have HBO Max or go to a theater.
The Visit?
Yeah.
Is that about Jesus?
I don't know. So, and After Earth was co-written with Will Smith.
Yes.
Go figure.
It's Will Smith, and I think Jaden Smith is co-starring in it.
But interesting. The thing is, once you get past, from 1999 to 2004, you had Sixth Sense, Unbreakable, Signs, and The Village. I feel like between the four of us, those are the top four movies. It's just how do you rank them?
Yeah, that's the peak. By far, that's the peak for M. Night.
So what question is, take those four and we each rank them.
Or we have to figure out, okay, what's the best of the rest?
We haven't seen the rest.
We haven't seen the rest.
Well,
so then it's Lady in the Water. You're welcome.
I'm going to throw this out there. There is a movie out there that is not a Shyamalan movie, but when I watched it, it felt a lot like a Shyamalan movie called 10 Cloverfield Lane. It takes place in the same universe as Cloverfield,
mm-hmm.
but it's its own story. You could watch one without the other. That would be interesting because I don't think any of you have seen that. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Have not seen it, but I was interested in seeing it.
That I enjoyed that movie a lot, and I think it would be cool if we were to watch it at some point in time.
The problem I have with going into a lot of suspense is that I don't like jump scares. And so unless I know it's going to be a good suspense movie, I'm generally not going to bother because I'm like, I'm afraid I'm just going to absolutely, completely not enjoy this movie. Like a bad action movie, I'll still enjoy because it's like, as long as something blows up, I'll be happy. But a suspense movie, it's like, this needs to be good for me to enjoy it.
I only remember two jump scares in 10 Cloverfield Lane, and one of them is excellent and like the best scene in the movie.
So once you have one jump scare, you're on pins and needles for that second jump scare. So I'll start first. So basically the four we're talking about is Sixth Sense, Unbreakable, Signs, and The Village, and rank them 1 to 4. For me, I think I'm going to go with Signs as number 1, The Village is number 2, Unbreakable number 3, and Sixth Sense is number 4 in my book.
I've already given you my ranking.
You did yours. So yeah.
I don't need to reiterate, but...
Give it to
it
us again.
It would be helpful.
I'll give it to you again. The Village, The Sixth Sense, Unbreakable, Signs. But I put Signs at a tier or two below those other three.
Sure.
Okay. I'm going to say number 4 is The Sixth Sense for me.
Ooh.
And that's because it for me, it doesn't have rewatchability. Once you've seen it and you know what happens and how it happens, I don't need to see it again. I've never seen it a second time. I have no desire to. It's not because I didn't like the movie. It's because, okay, cool. Well done. You got me. moving on. The other three I feel like have rewatchability. Obviously, we know for me, number one is Unbreakable. So it's a question of where do I split The Village and Signs? They're just about dead equal for me. I feel like just because I've seen Signs more, I would put Signs above The Village. But at the same time, I'm like, Village is also really, really enjoyable. I think I got to go Signs then The Village. So Unbreakable, Signs, Village, Sixth Sense.
Yeah. I think so I'm the same way with Signs in The Village. They're very close. I'm going to put Signs a little higher. I think it's a little more quotable. I think The Village is a little more. The Village
has better music.
The Village
Signs
has
more humor.
Signs has more humor. The Village has more of an aesthetic. The Village, you watch it and you're like, what the crap is going on? Like, the people just behave very strangely. Like, you feel uneasy watching The Village for the first time because every character is just off. So you feel like the whole thing is just off. Signs is more like, okay, these are normal people. I can relate to them. So if I was going to show someone else a movie, I'd probably start them with that one because it's maybe a little more relatable. So I'd probably be Signs, The Village, and then Unbreakable I've only seen once. So I'll put it third, and then The Sixth Sense I don't like. So that's the last one.
All right. Since nobody else is backing me up on The Village, I'm going to have to make my case for why I think it's the best M. Night Shyamalan movie. Here's my argument. And this is understanding that I'm coming from a John Calvin is my homeboy background, right? Is that I think the movie does a way better job of selling its central message than any of the other Shyamalan movies.
That's fair.
The whole, you can remove yourself from the world, but you will not solve any of the sin problems by doing so.
Mm-hmm.
As it does such a good job of portraying that without being, it's a little ham-fisted about it at points. Just in terms of we're getting to the end of the movie and now we need to actually explain, you know, it's sort of the reveal of, okay, here's what's actually going on. And it's sort of rushing through that, but I still think it's a really good execution of, there's so much about it that's believable.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's one of those things that I could see happening. It would be a lot harder to do in the 21st century, like at least this later into the 21st century than it was back then. But it's still like, some parts of this requires some stretching, but otherwise it's quite understandable.
Anyone care to defend their number one movie?
Well, for me, I think the top two, Unbreakable is pretty good too. I think the top two for me is Signs in The Village, and I could flip-flop either one right there. Okay. So I could be with you, Kevin, and having Village as number one. Because more I think about it, I'm like, yeah, that's a really good movie. I really enjoy that. I think Signs is more nostalgic for me.
Mm-hmm.
Like when I hear, hey, let's watch Signs, I'm like, oh yeah, there's this scene, we'll do this. And like, and so like I get more excited about it just because I know it more front to back. But I also really enjoy watching The Village.
Swing away. Paddy wagon.
Now here's the interesting thing. It seems like none of us were really against Unbreakable, but none of us were super for it.
Hey. That's my favorite.
That's your favorite. I missed that bit. I'm sorry. I thought you were trying to figure out the other two above Unbreakable.
No, so he put Sixth Sense at four, Unbreakable at one, and he knew that.
Oh,
and
you then threw he had me the, off, man.
And then he had the
flip. Yes. I thought you were going in reverse order. I missed that.
I'm very difficult to follow.
No, all he right. did the opposite order of all the rest of us.
Yes, because I didn't like your way.
All right. Sell me on Unbreakable. Why is it the greatest Shyamalan movie?
There's a number of elements to it. And first off, when it comes to superhero movies, I generally don't like them from the standpoint of you have too far removed reality to where it's like, wow, here's all these other planets. Here's all these other creatures and things that look like humans that have powers that can't be killed, but whatever.
So you're not a fan of the Marvel Cinematic Universe?
Or Superman.
Or Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles?
Yes.
Or like, The Mandalorian?
Like, at least with Batman, I could buy into, okay, somebody with a ton of money, with a ton of gadgetry and whatnot, can become a superhero. That's at least into a more expanded version of our current reality to a point that's like, all right, I can get lost in this story enough because it's just believable enough without it being like, it's a big green monster man that can turn back into a regular man. It's like, okay, you've lost me at that point. I can't suspend my disbelief that much. Unbreakable pulls that suspended disbelief without saying, we're a superhero movie, come watch a superhero movie. Pulls you through reality into just a slightly different possibility and doesn't go so far to where it's like, this guy can run straight through walls and jump so high and whatnot. It's like, it's an extreme version of something he already possesses, right? And that part of it I like, because then basically it's almost like a realism superhero movie. Like, if you're going to do it, I like it done that way, because I can buy into that concept from an entertainment standpoint. I think it's another movie that you need to watch several times to pick up on a number of subtleties here and there once you kind of know the result of the plot. And then you start to come back and you get to see things. And even like the third or fourth time through, you'll still see things that you didn't see the first three or four times through, which is, again, something with rewatchability for me is very enjoyable.
I don't disagree with you on that point, because I believe you, but I can't think of any examples off the top of my head where that applies in Unbreakable. What is an example of Unbreakable that you get to notice the second or third time through?
And maybe I'm just not as observant as you are, which is a definite possibility. Obviously, who Bruce Willis touches and who he doesn't touch, right?
You mean Samuel L. Jackson?
No, because when Bruce Willis touches somebody, he can get that flash of
whatnot.
Right. So who in the movie does he touch and doesn't he touch, and when, to where maybe he knows something he doesn't know or whatnot, other than the obvious ones in the film where it's like he rushes against somebody and they do a flash. But he obviously, does he contact other people throughout the film, or are those the only people you ever actually see him physically touch? Those kind of things, to where it's like, okay, so this is an element of his powers. Is it being used, not being used? That kind of thing. Some of Samuel L.'s scenes and just the color gradient they use for like his clothes and his character and stuff.
Yes.
And when things are revealed and when things aren't revealed is done artistically. And it's not done in such a way where it's like, oh, this is obvious kind of thing. It's just like, it's a brief glimpse as, you know, a jacket swings open and the inside is a bright color, you know.
Or the scene where he's trying to sell a comic book to a guy who's going to give it to his son as a birthday present. And he's like, no, you cannot give this work of art to a child.
Mm-hmm. Does this look like a toy store? Because you were looking for a toy.
That is a good scene.
And so, yeah, and then obviously, like, it's just in different elements of different things that are said in different parts of the movie correlate to other parts of the movie, but you don't know that until back through, and you can watch it back through several times and pick up, okay, when somebody was saying this was referring to this, that even the second time through you didn't catch, but the third time through it's like, ah. So you start to draw more lines through it, and so that makes it very rewatchable and digestible. I enjoy the acting, for sure. There's a couple of scenes where it's like, that could have been a little bit better, and you could have stuck around for a couple more takes, but okay. No movie's going to be perfect.
Is your favorite color rust? Rust?
Kind of is, honestly.
Not as rust, but like as a color, rust.
Yeah, I mean, did you see the jacket I wore at my wedding? My vest?
That was orange.
It was, but it was not like a bright orange. It was more like a rust orange.
I thought it was orange.
Rust color rust.
However, the groomsman shirt you got me, that was definitely orange.
Yes, that was orange. Yes. That's what Hobby Lobby had, so that was that.